from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on this special 4th of July edition of Forum, we'll bring you two interviews from our archives. First, you'll hear my discussion with Dr. and New York Times health correspondent Elizabeth Rosenthal about her series on why American healthcare is so expensive. Then at 9:30, we'll bring you my interview with Ramona Pearson as part of our First Person series profiling notable people in the Bay Area. After a terrible accident and an 18-month coma, she had to learn to walk, see, and even breathe again. She's now founder and CEO of a Silicon Valley company that develops technology for customized education tools. It's all coming up next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to a special encore edition of Forum. In May, I spoke with New York Times correspondent Elizabeth Rosenthal about her series Paying Till It Hurts, which is a detailed and comprehensive look at the high medical costs in the United States. Rosenthal, who is also a medical doctor, profiles the winners and losers of the current system and provides answers as to why 18% of this nation's GDP is spent on health care, nearly twice the amount spent in other developed countries. I asked her about the increase in colonoscopies, which she uses as an example to help explain the country's $2.7 trillion medical bill.
Colonoscopies are both a good test and a good business opportunity. And the question is, when are they really needed? And when are they just kind of money generators? And how much should they cost? When you look at international comparisons, when I spoke to a gastroenterologist in Austria and in Germany, and if you say, how much do you get? They get $200, $300, $400. And, you know, people get good colonoscopies there, too. So my interest after I had a colonoscopy when I was 50 was, why does it cost so much here? Why are we paying so much for the same services that other people get elsewhere for cheaper?
And you do that with many things, as we'll talk about. But it's not only that the costs, by the way, have quadrupled after the recognition of how widespread the need was, at least from the perspective of what was put out there, but also the procedures doubled between 2003 and 2009, as you point out. So a lot of this comes down to the fact that there's simply more money to be made, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, colonoscopy is a good business. It's two things. It's the volume of procedures you do, which have doubled, and there's also how much you charge per procedure. And if we look at the first one, I've heard stories now, and I got a lot of calls from geriatricians who were saying that their 90-year-old patients who were partially disabled were being told they should go get colonoscopies. Now, if that's the case, more people are going to get into trouble, you know, running to the bathroom for the prep where they can fall or get really dehydrated, than will be saved from the procedure. And that doesn't make any sense. So there's great motivation to do something where you're making a lot of money. I mean, I've heard of gastroenterologists who send out reminders every 2 years. Now, there is no reason for people who've had a clean colonoscopy to go to get another one in 2 years, except the profit.
Well, the Veterans Affairs doesn't use colonoscopies. There are sedatives used there, and in other countries they don't use them. And in fact, as member Kaiser, I was told at one point, why not have a sigmoidoscopy? It's less expensive and probably does the job.
Right. There are a lot of other options. And my point isn't that you should never get a colonoscopy. It's a good screening test. But there are a lot of other options. And in America, we default to the most expensive and most profitable one. And as you said, colonoscopies can be done with or without anesthesia. They can be done in a doctor's office or in a hospital. Mine was done in a hospital because I thought I wanted to go somewhere in network. I thought it would be cheaper. It was billed at $12,000 because I was really shocked. I had my colonoscopy in a full-fledged operating room.
Surgical centers are booming now, too. I mean, they're part of this essentially proliferation of cost expenses, as you point out. But right. I think we need to kind of gear in on the fact that there are more tests and more procedures than in any other country. We're talking not only about colonoscopies, talking about drugs that are right. prescribed. We're talking about scans. I mean, it's scandalous is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good term for it. I mean, you know, there's incredible profit motive in this system. And there have been plenty of studies to show that if, for example, a doctor has an interest in a surgery center or a scanner, he or she will order more scans. It's human nature. It's not really, you know, bad doctors or good doctors. It is human nature. And I think we have to address that in our system. We can't keep paying scan by scan by scan because that's going to lead to more scans. It's just the way economics works.
But all this economics, notwithstanding all these rising numbers in medical costs, Americans don't get better medical care.
Now, there have been plenty of studies showing that on average, our health outcomes are no better than in other developed countries. And I like to point out to people as a former physician that, I believe in medicine. I get my required screening tests. But most people or many people, particularly if they have good insurance, get too many tests. And too many tests, there is a downside. There's, first of all, the cash that flows out from that. And when people say, like my screening test, my $12,000 colonoscopy, it was free to me, but it wasn't free to our system. My premiums, my copays, my out-of-pocket deductibles are going up year by year by year. So nothing is free. And I want to point out to people that all tests have a downside. You get a bad result that may be a false positive bad result. Then that will set off more tests and more tests. People die from over-testing as well as from under-testing.
Of course, affordable care is supposed to change all this, right?
Well, not really. I mean, the Affordable Care Act was a good thing in that it gave everyone the option of having affordable health insurance. That doesn't mean you have affordable health care. So first of all, we've seen there are a lot of people who still aren't covered. Second of all, the Affordable Care Act doesn't deal directly in this big issue of health care costs. So great, you have insurance and you have a, say, 20% copay on your procedures. That may sound acceptable to you if your colonoscopy costs $500. If your colonoscopy is being billed at $12,000, that 20% copay is going to hurt, which is why we call the serious pain till it hurts. It's not reasonable. So the second step is we really have to deal with this issue of pricing and over-ordering of tests.
And I want to talk with you how we can deal with that, because you get into it in your article, but also talk with you about some things that have come out from the Congressional Budget Office. If medical costs continue unabated, and I'm quoting now, total spending on government health care programs will eventually essentially account for all of the country's economic output, and federal spending on government health care programs is a primary cause for these long-term budget deficits that we keep hearing about. I mean, this is what a lot of people really have to understand, just how much impact these medical costs are having.
Right. And I think so. Part of the reason I wanted to do this series is not about personal health. I'm in the news department. I'm a physician, so I care about personal health. But it's really a political issue. This is not sustainable. It's completely not sustainable. Think of all the things we're not getting because we're paying twice as much for health care as other countries. We could be using that money for education, for infrastructure improvement. And as you said, we were celebrating last year because the rate of increase of health spending had seemed to drop. It wasn't flat or it wasn't going down. The increase was just not the 8 to 10% we'd
seen before.
The
spending actually went from 8% to 4% over the course of 4 years. That's what we keep hearing
bandied
about.
Right. Now, you could say, wow, that's great, but it's still going up 4%. That's more than than the economy. And second of all, we've seen this year that it seems to be going up again. So a lot of people think that 4% number was a result of the recession. Now we have more people covered under the Affordable Care Act. Spending, all the indications, I think, are that it's going to keep going up. And P.S., one thing you have to remember is when we look at the national spending of health care, that doesn't really factor in that you and I and everyone with Affordable Care Act insurance or private insurance are going to be paying more and more out of pocket. So is it 4% because I'm paying 4% more out of pocket now rather than 8%? I don't know. I'm very skeptical of numbers showing that it's really going, that it's really tapering off. I think we need better ways to deal with it than we're doing now.
Well, we also need better ways to insure against the extraordinary escalation of costs in hospitals, which you also tackle in your articles. And we'll talk about that because it has some local resonance, to put it mildly. But the United States has this high rate of obesity, but we also have a young population, fewer smokers than many of the Western European countries, as you point out in your articles, but limited access to routine care, particularly for the poor, and fewer doctor visits and fewer hospital stays. And yet the costs continue to climb.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is we don't use the cheap preventive parts of medicine as much as we should, and we use the extraordinary disease-treating parts of medicine more than we should. I mean, basically, if you have an example I like to give is if you have type 2 diabetes, you probably at the early...
I do, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, this is for you then. Early on in the course of the disease, changing your diet and exercise will have a huge impact. Many health insurance plans won't pay for that, but they are very happy to pay for the $500 a month drugs that you may be encouraged to use. So, you know, again, when we have a choice of doing something that's inexpensive and sensible versus something that's expensive and extraordinary, we default to the extraordinary.
You also point out when you're talking about hospitals, when you're writing about hospitals, mm-hmm. that it's so strange in many ways, and I don't know how many people actually consider this, that the patient doesn't get a bill, doesn't get any prices until after the procedures are over. And you talk about all these procedures like a kid going in and getting a cut treated with skin glue for close to $1,700 and somebody else getting a stitch in a hospital for $500. I mean, you seem outrageous, but at the same time, you don't get the bill until the procedure is done.
Right. And can you imagine any other purchase that you make this way or any other industry that works this way? I mean, this came home to roost. My daughter, who's a senior in college, went to a local emergency room with some stomach pains, and she got a $32,000 workup to rule out appendicitis, including a $12,000 CAT scan and a $9,000 sonogram. That's crazy. That's really, really crazy. And if someone had said to me up front, will you pay for that? Do you want your insurance to pay for that? I would say, no way. That's ridiculous. But you're not given that option.
Hospital prices, nothing, I think you quote someone saying, nothing more convoluted than hospital pricing. And in fact, I think it is in JAMA, in the Journal of American Medical Association, says that's the biggest driver of medical inflation. And you use it as an example, California Medical Center here in Northern California.
Yeah. Well, you know, I chose California Pacific Medical Center because Sutter has an incredible market share in Northern California. I also came to California in a good way because California is the one state that requires hospitals to publish their charge masters. So you can actually see how the charges add up. But I should point out that Sutter is doing what hospitals all across the country are doing. They are not extraordinary. They are the norm. They're just doing it perhaps a little bit better. So,
which is maximizing their revenue, basically, and their prices.
Well, they can, you know, because in any industry, if you have a big market share, you charge what you can get away with. And that's what's happened in healthcare, as it's happened with in any other industry. Now, you know, in fairness to hospitals, they do a public service. They, you know, they open emergency rooms. They do some community outreach. They don't get reimbursed for everything they do. But I think we need far better accounting, both with the bills and, well, what are you doing?
How about
for the
transparency,
community?
Too?
Yeah.
I mean, but Sutter has actually, they operate over 24 hospitals in Northern California. A lot of this is consolidation. So they have emergency rooms, which are essentially profit centers, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how they operate. Yeah.
When I was a physician, the emergency rooms were – I worked in an emergency room. It was a loss center because everyone could walk in the door, and many of those people had no insurance. I mean, hospitals have become very clever at how they manage their patient flow to make sure they're making money. So basically, some hospitals have – including Sutter in some locations – have shut down services that are loss leaders, like dialysis, or they've outsourced those. Meanwhile, hospitals like to focus on things like cardiology and orthopedics, which are money makers for them. So I've even heard in some parts of the country where people want to set up ancillary emergency rooms, urgent care centers. They don't do it in inner cities because people in inner cities don't have insurance. They do it by highways because people who get in car accidents, by and large, do have insurance. So it's gotten that cynical.
How did Sutter respond to your articles? Or was there a response?
I mean, they were, I have to say, they stepped up to the plate. They talked about why they charge what they do. They talked about their service to San Francisco and Northern California. They talked about the struggles of having to be earthquake compliant, which is a, you know, an unusual requirement that hospitals in California have to deal with.
And an expensive requirement.
And an expensive requirement. But I think, you know, if you look at hospitals, wherever you're sitting today, look at the building in your city, and it's almost all hospital construction because hospitals have money and they've been able to get loans and they're not for profits, which is another issue that we need to deal with. So, you know, I think we're going to see, just as we had this housing bubble, I think there's going to be a hospital bubble. And I think we're going to see a lot of that money invested into all private rooms and nice artwork and roof gardens. That is not money well spent. And it's not money that contributes to our health care, which is what bothers me. My friends will say, oh, that hospital's so wonderful. They have free coffee in the lobby. And that's what patients notice. But that's not what your health is about.
Well, some of these costs have gone so into excess. I mean, and in fact, just as another example, childbirth costs highest here than it does anywhere in the world. And you take 21 categories, I mean, just compare them in terms of cost, and the United States is at top. So I'm sure there are, you know, thousands of people listening now saying, what can we do? What can we as patients do to drive down these costs or bring them down, especially against all the lobbying that's done to bring them and keep them up?
Yeah, I think ultimately the solution has to be political and national. But in the meantime, I am urging everyone to look at those, because what's happened in the past is when you have decent insurance, the explanation of benefits comes in, you open it and you look at it and think, wow, that's a crazy price, but you're not paying it. So you don't fight back. I encourage everyone to ask about prices up front. If we don't ask, they're not going to tell. To insist on knowing before you go in for your colonoscopy, what's it going to cost? And I think most doctors, most hospitals will say, oh, we don't know. Don't worry. Your insurance will cover it. I don't care. I want to know. Tell me. And when your doctor says you need an MRI scan, ask. Ask why I need an MRI scan. Ask why you're being referred to X radiology center rather than Y radiology center, because the difference among MRI scans is it's something like 300% to 400%. So what I do, and I try and practice what I preach, I always ask prices, and you know, I will go to the cheaper one, because the truth is an MRI is mostly an MRI and it doesn't really matter. And
it's sort of like shopping at Lowman's or something.
Well,
like
it's sad. At some level, it's crazy that you have to do this, but you know, I think we all have to take our individual stand. And I think we have to, you know, both physicians and patients have to get in the practice of talking about costs and thinking about costs, because it's considered, I often say, it's like, I don't know if people have read the Harry Potter books, it's the Voldemort of healthcare. You know, no one wants to discuss it. And I think that's a really, really bad precedent. Would you, you know, renovate your kitchen without asking about price? You wouldn't. So we have to really get everyone in the practice of saying, what's it going to cost? And why is it going to cost this much? Where is that? Where is that price coming? Because I think more and more with the Affordable Care Act plans, and again with the commercial plans as well, we're going to be paying more out of pocket. A lot of these plans have $8,000 out of pocket maximums. So you better start looking, because otherwise, as the patients in my story did, they're going to get back from the ER and suddenly see a $3,000 bill, and they're going to be responsible for $1,000 of that. That's not nothing.
And reading your articles, I kept coming back to the notion of how all these strong special interests, and I'll use that overused phrase. I mean, in fact, the insurance, interestingly enough, the insurance industry has been kind of capped by some of the other interests. I mean, the medical interests and the hospital interests.
Well, I think everyone is doing well by this healthcare system except the patients. And
it's like members of a mob or something getting together and deciding how they're going to divide the geography.
Well, and I think that's what I like to say, that, you know, the industry now is about making sure you keep your piece of that $2.7 trillion pie. And everyone points to everyone else. The doctors say it's the hospitals say it's the insurers.
They'll pass the buck. Yeah.
And, you know, the system will have to change in all of its parts. And patients are often caught in the middle. What happens, you know, now how prices are negotiated is the hospital or the physician will say, this is what we want to charge. The insurer will say, this is what we're going to pay. And then the patient is kind of left maybe paying the difference that they couldn't agree on, or maybe the doctor won't offer that service or won't play with your insurer anymore. We've all experienced this because he or she doesn't like the prices that are being offered. And the patient really has no say in this. And that's, you know, to me, the essence of a healthcare system isn't about money or jobs or economics. It's about, is it giving good healthcare? And ours is failing us in that way.
You mean it's not about coffee for the patients who come in?
Well, I go a little berserk when people tell me about isn't the free coffee great? I'm like, yes, but they're charging, you know, $5,000 for an MRI. I'll buy my coffee at Starbucks and I want a $1,000 MRI. So
the fact is, there's no regulatory medical pricing that we can point to, except for, I suppose, setting payment rates for Medicaid and Medicare.
Yeah, Medicaid and Medicare do it. The VA system, with all of its trouble, is doing it, but not in the private sector. And, you know, Medicare does it in a rather limited way, with increased cost sharing for patients. You know, I'm hearing a lot from people who have Medicare Part D who are really, really suffering from rising drug prices. I mean, that's a huge problem. And I should point out, this series, it's based on what we're hearing from patients. Every person in this series is someone who responded as a commenter on nytimes.com with their story. And the main thing I've learned from this series, aside from all the specifics about the economics, is that people are really, really suffering. I can't tell you how many people have said to me, healthcare is my largest single expense now, more than my house, more than food, more than my car.
A listener who writes, I am a 52-year-old woman with chronic health problems. Over the years, I have found it impossible to even get a quote on what a procedure will cost beforehand. This includes run-of-the-mill procedures performed thousands of times a day in the country. I spent half an hour on the phone once with an anesthesiologist dancing around the fact that he would not give me a number. Healthcare in this country is shameful. Another listener says, until a few years ago, the public put all the blame for soaring medical costs on insurance companies. Sure, insurance companies skim a small percentage off the top, but they are not the cost drivers. If insurance companies were the problem, Medicare would be going just fine and dandy. Instead, Medicare cost limits are resulting in caregivers shifting billing to the for-profit insurance. There's a listener who writes, and get your take on this. Larry writes, there's a simple reason why healthcare is more expensive here. The health insurance companies are exempt from antitrust laws, and thus there is no competition for lower prices. The McCarran-Ferguson Act of 1945 is the culprit and is never mentioned as the source of the ever-escalating prices. That's a point. You know?
Yep.
How about this? We were talking about regions before. Beth writes, heck, why do some major operations cost less at the Mayo Clinic Connected Hospital in Minnesota and more in some places like Houston, Texas? Or a heart operation at Mercy Hospital in Sacramento was less expensive and better than at some place like Dameron Hospital in Stockton?
Yeah, this is where transparency would really help, where if we see what everyone is charging for what they do, I think we could start to at least talk about prices. And one thing, when people say, well, what's a first step? In many countries in Europe, there are price lists in doctor's offices. Before a French surgeon replaces your hip, you sign a contract saying this is what it's going to cost. And I really, really think we need to move in that direction.
You've been listening to a special encore edition of Forum from our archives. Our guest was Dr. and New York Times health correspondent Elizabeth Rosenthal. We talked about her series titled Paying Till It Hurts, all about the high cost of healthcare in the United States. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larber. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.